Thank you, Blessing and Jonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, March 25th, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sandra Nyaira.
And I'm Chris Gande.
Studio 7 is going out to Zimbabwe on 909 medium wave and on 4930, 5940 and 15455 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com. Text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Here are our top stories this evening.
MDCT leader Morgan Tsvangirai and Secretary General Tendai Biti bury their differences, ostensibly ending the leadership renewal campaign in the party.
We all agree that we owe it to the people of this country and the party at large to discuss and resolve matters so that we will be more effective in providing hope and a credible alternative to ZANU-PF.
The cash-strapped government fails to pay some civil servants their much salaries as the economic crisis in the country deepens.
We did not see the reason why we were even writing to government, because the agreement we signed with the government in January is legitimate.
And a landmark ruling by the Supreme Court today holds the government liable for its failure to provide a rape victim with emergency contraceptives following a 2006 attack.
MDCT leader Morgan Tsvangirai says he has closed the ranks with his lieutenants, among them Secretary General Tendai Biti, following a campaign calling for his immediate resignation to pave way for the renewal of the opposition party ahead of the country's next elections expected in 2018. Thomas Chiripasi has more details from the capital.
Tsvangirai told a news conference at his party's Harvest House headquarters today that he has resolved his differences with senior officials of his party who were calling for his ouster following a five-hour-long meeting of his party's National Executive Committee held in the capital Monday. Some senior MDCT officials, among them Party Treasurer General Roy Bennett, his deputy Elton Mangoma, National Executive Member and former Marondera Central Legislator Ian Kay and Secretary General of the Youth Assembly Promise Mkwananzi have been calling for leadership renewal in the Labour-backed party. Tsvangirai said the meeting agreed that the opposition party has to focus on the broader picture, that is resolving socio-economic problems affecting ordinary Zimbabweans, he says caused by the alleged rigging of elections by President Robert Mugabe and his ZANU-PF party, instead of wasting time on internal squabbles.
I'm proud to announce today that we have discussed our issues and there is now unprecedented harmony and unity of purpose in the MDC cockpit. We all agree that we owe it to the people of this country and the party at large to discuss and resolve matters so that we will be more effective in providing hope and a credible alternative to ZANU-PF.
The former Prime Minister said no one in his party has a right to pass a vote of no confidence in party officials elected at Congress. This follows a vote of no confidence in the party's Harare provincial leadership led by Paul Madzore that had been replaced by an executive led by Highfield legislator Eric Murai.
The Harare senior leaders have not been suspended. The Mutare, there are two people who have been suspended for indiscretions that they have committed, and the due disciplinary process will be engaged in. As for our Deputy Treasurer General, a due process is being followed.
Tsvangirai said he does not expect his party's Secretary General and former Finance Minister Tendai Biti to behave in a manner that undermines the party. This was in reference to his actions when Mangoma was suspended by the National Council last month for allegedly fomenting divisions in the party. Biti immediately called a press conference where he described Mangoma's suspension for allegedly undermining the authority of party organs and abuse of party funds, promoting factionalism as voidable. Biti and Elias Mudzuri, who was also calling for leadership change, were present at Tsvangirai's press briefing today. Tsvangirai said the unity showed by the leadership should now cascade to the party structures. He urged supporters to refrain from engaging in acts of violence. The former premier renewed his call for national dialogue with President Mugabe's administration to address the socio-economic problems afflicting the nation. he dismissed a report in the Newsday newspaper yesterday suggesting ZANU-PF had offered him the post of deputy president, which he rejected.
The solution necessarily is not a GNU, because we all know what has happened at the end. Takabetsera ZANU-PF. We stabilized the situation, we helped the people, we revived education, we revived health. We did everything possible that even people in the rural areas can confirm. Now, what happened at the end? Was that strategic? That strategy must have ensured a free and fair election, which was then rigged and subverted.
He later told Studio 7 that some leaders of the Southern African Development Community were now accepting that national elections held in Zimbabwe last year did not reflect the will of the electorate. SADC and the African Union endorsed the polls that were described by the international community as fundamentally flawed. ZANU-PF says it won freely and fairly. The opposition leader said the large number of people attending his rallies is clear testimony that ordinary Zimbabweans did not vote for ZANU-PF.
The people have invested so much in this great movement. Only on Saturday in Tafara, in Chipinge, I saw a cheerful MDC cadre who lost a leg in a ZANU-PF-led violence in 2008. But despite his losing the leg, there was still a beaming smile and abundant hope planted on his face. We will not let him down. Together with many others across Zimbabwe, we have suffered in this tenacious struggle for positive change in the country.
Tsvangirai is on record calling for a united front against ZANU-PF in elections expected in 2018. But he has also raised the need for the post to be brought forward, saying this would address what he says is the crisis of legitimacy affecting Mr. Mugabe and his government. But some parties like the newly formed National Constitutional Assembly have said they are not prepared for a grand coalition, while the smaller MDC formation, led by former Industry Minister Walshman Ncube, has said its doors are open for dialogue on the issue. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Thanks, Thomas. Meanwhile, ZANU-PF has dismissed Mr. Tsvangirai's assertions that only dialogue between his MDC and the ruling party can address problems currently afflicting the nation. ZANU-PF spokesman Rugare Gumbo says Mr. Tsvangirai and his party have nothing to offer Zimbabwe.
Well, I've said time and again that Tsvangirai is a dreamer. He still looks at himself and the situation in Zimbabwe as it was in 2009. The reality of the matter is that there is no basis for us to be negotiating with the Tsvangirais of this world regarding how government should be run. We had elections where we defeated the opposition resoundingly, and we have over two-thirds majority in parliament. Whether you have negotiation settlement, it will go on the basis of what you have in the basket. As far as we are concerned, what we have in the basket is over two-thirds majority. So there is no basis whatsoever. People should know constitutional democracy. How do you go about a thing of this nature? Those that win, you know, take the plate, and those who lose, well, look, it's too bad, they'll try next time. And as far as we are concerned, we don't think MDC as such has ideas that can change the economy of this country. Yes, we have challenges. There's no question about it. We have a liquidity decline and so on. But the government, the party, together, we are doing our level best to try and rectify the situation. And I have no doubt in my mind that we will succeed. So there's no basis of having dialogue or negotiation with the opposition political party.
What are you doing to address these challenges?
Oh, what we are trying to do is, as I say, to try and formulate friendly investment policies and the direction. That's what we have to work on. We have also to try and restructure our financial institution, our setup.
ZANU-PF spokesman Rugare Gumbo on the line from Harare with Studio 7 reporter Jonga Kandemiri. Political analyst Nkululeko Sibanda of the Huddersfield University in Britain doubts the so-called MDCT reconciliation will hold.
In political terms, statements and machinations indicating reunification or the pushing of certain matters into the back burner does not usually work. I think that it is a temporary fix. It will not solve the questions surrounding Tsvangirai's leadership, and that this will remain questionable. And I don't see his lieutenants, which included, becoming wholeheartedly repentant on the matter. I know that the differences between BET, Mangoma, and others as regards Tsvangirai's leadership have been long-standing, and we've had similar statements in the past indicating that these have been put to rest and that they will not be raised again. But what we see is that they keep coming up again and again. I can rest assure you that this is not the last time we've heard of this matter. This is not the last time we will connect Tendai Biti to a question around Morgan Tsvangirai's leadership. And I am also certain that Tsvangirai's leadership is going to become a lot more vulnerable now that he will be required, even by his own supporters, to be seen to be accommodating Biti and his camp. And doing so may include making huge concessions. And I think politically, Tsvangirai has weakened his hand on this matter.
Mr. Tsvangirai is demanding another election. Is that a relevant narrative at the moment?
I think it is a harmless buck. It doesn't change the political ground. Mugabe's political maneuver was sealed with the election, given that his election was approved by SADC and AU. Very important. If Tsvangirai wants to see some change or he wants to call for a new election. And as a result of this, I see Tsvangirai just pandering to the crowd here to be seen to be doing something. He seeks relevance by seeming to castigate Mugabe, by seeming to challenge Mugabe. I think this has nothing to do with a new election. This has nothing to do with the economy. This has everything to do with Tsvangirai seeking new relevance.
That was political analyst Nkululeko Sibanda on the line with Studio 7 from the United Kingdom.
The cash-strapped government has failed to pay some civil servants their much salaries as the economic crisis in the country deepens. Chairman Richard Gundani of the Apex Council, a body that represents civil servants, confirmed to Studio 7 that Harare has failed to pay some civil servants like clerks and office workers. Speaking on condition he was not named, a senior official in the finance ministry told Studio 7 that the government's coffers are empty. The only civil servants paid so far for this month are teachers and members of the uniformed forces.
Gundani said unions representing civil servants are also concerned that they are requested to meet government officials to sign an agreement that their expected salary increase next month will be honored has largely been ignored. The government's non-committal stance has also widened the divisions between two organizations representing the teachers, the Zimbabwe Teachers Association, ZIMTA, and the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe, PTUZ. ZIMTA Chief Executive Officer Sifiso Ndlovu says the unions are still pressing for an audience with the government.
What is happening is that there is stale information regarding that. We approached government and we have been informing them to ask for a response for a meeting that we requested on the 14th of February 2014. And that meeting was requested, we are told by APEX that the meeting was requested. So we are waiting there for the APEX leadership to follow up that. And as ZIMTA, we are worried that government has not met any commitment to meeting the APEX Council, and neither to advise anybody on the status quo regarding salary.
Who specifically was engaged by the APEX Council?
Yes, the APEX Council wrote to the National Joint Negotiating Council chairperson, who ordinarily, I understand, should also meet with the other team leader from government and the team leader from the workers' side, and then agree on a date after consultation. The two leaders will consult their sides and after consultation, then they come with the mandate that has been given. But so far, our government doesn't seem to be coming forward with that.
So what is the way forward?
Well, we will continue to push APEX Council to do that, because as ZIMTA, the only thing that we can do now is to wait for APEX Council to push for that. And this has been happening, so we are told, and unfortunately, without any good result. It will seemingly look like the government has been ducking and diving, and that means that probably they are facing challenges.
That was ZIMTA Chief Executive Officer Sifiso Ndlovu speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
A Blessing also spoke with PTUZ President Kabafira Jowu, who says they have deployed their officers to mobilize for possible strike action if the government fails to deliver.
I must make the record very straight. That is, while it's at times we go by Apex Council decisions, but as a union in PTUZ, we did not see the reason why we were even writing to government. Because the agreement we signed with the government in January is legitimate. And it is a government that unilaterally changed that agreement. If we continue to sign agreements, we are not rest assured that the government would honor those agreements. And what the teachers are saying throughout Zimbabwe, that are not necessarily PTUZ members, is that what is important now is the response of the teachers when the government fails to meet its obligation or its contractual agreement.
But have you already started to engage your members?
Yes, we are going throughout Zimbabwe in all the provinces. We have our collective coordinators who are also going throughout the provinces and from all the four corners of Zimbabwe. The message is very clear from the teachers that we would lose relevance if we continue to understand that government has no money, when we know that there are people who are earning in this very country, Zimbabwe, salaries that are about 500,000 or 750,000. Yet the government has been paying these people.
PTUZ President Takabafira Jowu on the line from Masvingo.
The state-owned agricultural marketing authority says it intends to borrow $155 million to allow the grain marketing board to buy maize to supplement available grain reserves in the country. Ivan Chifera has more details.
Giving oral evidence to the National Assembly's Agriculture Portfolio Committee, AMA Chief Executive Officer Rocky Mutena said the organization wrote to the government 3 weeks ago requesting for a guarantee to borrow $55 million, which will be used to buy about 250,000 tons of maize.
As of now, the authority has approached both the Minister of Agriculture and the Minister of Finance for a borrowing power certificate for $55 million, which when issued will permit the authority to float this bill issue. The proceeds will be available to the Grain Marketing Board to use for maize purchase this season.
He said AMA expects the GMB to use the money to buy maize for its commercial division as they have to repay the borrowed funds.
We are in dialogue with GMB to ensure that it goes to commercial division because this is borrowed money. We expect that when the maize is purchased, it is traded or milled into millimill and be sold so that we repay the funds that we will have borrowed from the public.
Mutena added that a further $100 million would be raised locally and internationally to buy more grain, adding the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe is advising the authority on how to raise this amount.
RBZ officials have proposed the following, that AMA approaches the African Development Bank through their local office and establish whether they can be in a position to assist. That AMA approaches the South African Public Investment Corporation, which is said to be very liquid.
Maize is not a controlled crop in Zimbabwe. Mutena said the GMB would have to compete with private players to buy the grain on the local market, adding private players have assured them they will also buy grain locally before going to foreign markets. Zimbabwe needs about 2 million metric tons of grain annually, but the GMB has been failing to buy enough maize due to underfunding by the Treasury. The move by AMA complements other efforts by the government and the GMB to ensure food security in the country by buying enough maize to feed the nation. Meanwhile, Health and Child Care Minister David Parenyatwa told the Senate today that the government has set up an interim management team to run the Premier Service Medical Aid Society, comprising officials from the Ministries of Health, Finance, Public Service, President's Office, and the Civil Service Commission. He said the team's key role would be to call for an annual general meeting and consult members on the way forward. Parire Nyatwa said, following developments at PISMAS and other medical aid societies, where top executives were earning millions of dollars at the expense of service delivery, the government would soon set up an authority to regulate their operations. There are more than 30 medical aid societies, representing only 1% of the total population in the country. Parire Nyatwa said it is important for the country to explore possibilities of setting up a national health insurance so everyone is covered regardless of their financial status. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Meanwhile, Matabeleland South Senator Owachi Sibanda tells VOA's Standikile Mhlanga that the Senate welcomed Dr. Parire Nyatwa's announcement on PISMAS, but turned down the Minister of Justice's attempt to read an amendment of the country's Electoral Act for the second time, as the Senate was not yet prepared for its discussion. The amendment seeks to align the Electoral Act with the new constitution.
The House was delighted in the sense that it has been outstanding for quite some time, and there was a lot of embracing of money by the board of PISMAS, and now the Senate was actually very much excited. Questions that were raised were that since the board had been dissolved, who was now in charge of the organization? And in response, the minister said there was a team of management that was given a task to run the organization till such a time that there is a substantive board that is going to be in place in a short time.
What other issues did you discuss?
There were quite a number of issues that were on the motion, but the one that was basically dealt with was the one, the Zimbabwe Electoral Act Amendment Bill, which was brought by the Deputy Minister of Justice and Legal Affairs, Honorable Chasi. He wanted to bring the act into the House so that it could be read for the second time. But unfortunately, the House had to ask the minister to postpone it to next week, Tuesday, since the last time that the act was brought to the Senate was in December last year. Therefore, people were not ready to debate on the issue. Therefore, they requested him to postpone the bill to next week, of which he agreed in principle.
That was Matabeleland South Senator Owachi Sibanda on the line from Harare. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 medium wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15455 shortwave frequencies.
Coming up,
a Supreme Court rules government liable for not providing rape a victim with emergency contraception.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
Angry relatives of the passengers on board the missing Malaysian jetliner protested in front of the Malaysian embassy in Beijing today as the search for the plane was suspended due to bad weather.
And U.S. news outlets say the Obama administration will propose new legislation that will ban the National Security Agency from the collection and storing of massive amounts of Americans' phone records.
The Southern African Litigation Center is hailing a landmark Supreme Court judgment today, holding the government liable for its failure to provide a rape victim with emergency contraceptives following a 2006 attack. The court ordered the government to pay damages after failing to give her the morning after pill to prevent contraception. The precedent-setting case was launched in the courts by Mildred Mapingure, the rape victim, and the Zimbabwe Women Lawyers Association. In 2006, Mapingure sought emergency contraceptives within 72 hours to ensure that she did not become pregnant after the rape, but failed to access the contraceptives due to delays at the police station. She then sought a lawful termination, but judicial delays also barred her from obtaining the necessary court order to terminate the pregnancy. SALC, says the judgment is a significant victory for women's sexual rights in Zimbabwe, adding it sends a clear message to the state to prioritize women's rights. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke with project lawyer Nyasha Chingore of the Southern African Litigation Center on the judgment's significance.
The doctor failed to differentiate between a termination of pregnancy and emergency contraceptive, which is what we commonly refer to as the morning after pill, and actually said that he could not help her because she needed a police report to the effect that she had been raped for him to be able to give that service to her. This is not correct in terms of the Zimbabwean law. You only need some kind of certificate or to provide services for termination of pregnancy, not to provide emergency contraceptives.
What should women expect when they're dealing with such an issue when it comes to authority, and what must they know or understand?
The best that we can actually say is that women should know their rights and therefore should be able to insist on being given the services that they're supposed to be given, now that the court has actually clarified the legal position. The problem, I think, in a lot of cases is that women themselves are unaware of the legal position and therefore fall into the trap of not knowing.
You spoke about the issue of women understanding their rights. Some might say that this is not a prevalent issue, that looking at this case, although the Supreme Court handed down such a judgment, that maybe this does not occur all the time and this was a one-off situation.
What we do know is that there are a lot of problems generally with accessing reproductive rights services. And these problems manifest in a lot of different ways. So this is not just about the morning after pill. This is also about contraceptives more broadly and other services more broadly speaking.
Project lawyer Nyasha Chingore of the Southern African Litigation Center in South Africa.
Zimbabwe yesterday joined the rest of the world in marking TB Day, but people living in rural communities are complaining awareness campaigns are concentrated around urban and peri-urban areas. Dande resident Tashinga Sibanda said he was happy to hear about the TB issues in detail on Studio 7 Live Talk last night, but he adds lives could be saved if the health ministry and its partners took such campaigns to rural communities. He spoke with Marvelous Mtlanganyawie about his experiences as a TB patient.
The symptoms were that I was feeling a lot of dizzy and fever in the first place, and I was coughing for a quite long time. It begins from the sunset until dawn. I was always coughing. I couldn't even sleep. The temperature of my body was so high.
So when you went to be tested, what did you receive? Did you have to pay money for your medications?
No, I didn't pay money. I only pay money for the hospital card, but the treatment was free. And I'm saying that the government is doing a lot of efforts and good for the people, for the sake of those people who are the problem of getting finance. The government is just able to offer a free treatment to most of the people, especially on that disease.
How long was the treatment for TB for you?
It took something like 6 months.
You say that you were treated in town, but you are now in the rural areas. Where exactly are you? And are you seeing similar facilities being offered to people in the rural areas?
The problem that we are experiencing in rural areas is that there is shortage of hospitals. Because you know what, TB is being treated, in most cases in Zimbabwe, it is being treated in hospitals, not clinics. But now the rural areas are really much occupied with the clinics, not hospitals. The clinics do not have facilities to treat TB. In most cases, a patient is asked to, otherwise have to travel from the rural area to town to receive medication, especially to receive the drugs. You are going to be given the drugs for almost 2 weeks, and you are supposed to go back home and use those drugs. If they are now come to extinct, you are supposed to go back and take the medication.
So what would you advise the government to do, especially in the rural areas, in your area of Dande where you are currently staying?
The government should take a mass campaign teaching people on the dangers of TB, teaching people that TB is a disease but can be cured. It is a disease but it can be prevented. It is a disease, of course, but people should not really take it as HIV and AIDS, because it's a disease that can be treated and one can become normal as he was before being affected by the disease. I also advise government that they should also give one or two medical facilitators to the clinics who are capable of treating TB or who are able to notice that if a patient comes to that clinic, that person should notify that this person is suffering from TB and work with that person.
That was Dande resident and Studio 7 listener Tashinga Sibanda speaking with Marvelous Mtlanganyawie.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our host will discuss with experts and you, the listeners, about the MDCT purportedly uniting following problems of the last month. What do you think?
Yes, to join the discussion, Chris, all the listeners need to do is to text us at